It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
It's the Media Buzz Meter with Howard Kurtz.
Let me just bat this one around for a few minutes, even though it has nothing to do with Donald Trump. Serena Williams retiring from tennis. Now, what's fascinating here, and yes, she's had this great career, 23 Grand Slam singles titles, all kinds of tributes coming out now. She's 40 years old, which is pretty ancient for tennis. But what's fascinating here is she didn't just put out a press release or do an Instagram video. She orchestrated this media rollout that landed her on the cover of Vogue, which had the exclusive, and an exclusive interview, which of course was very puffy. And she is casting this as, okay, I'm moving on from tennis, but I have all these other things I want to do. In other words, it's a relaunch of the Serena brand. It's a rebranding of one of the most famous women on the planet, certainly one of the most recognizable names in any sport, whether you're a tennis fan or not. I happen to be a big tennis fan. And, you know, she's been outspoken. I mean, Serena Williams is not shy on the court or off the court. So in this Vogue interview, she says, I'm here to tell you I'm evolving away from tennis. I love that. Not retiring, evolving toward other things. A few years ago, I quietly started Serena Ventures, a venture capital firm. Soon after that, I started a family. I want to grow that family. Now, she said until recently, the idea of her ever retiring from tennis was a taboo topic. She only brought it up with her therapist. It's not real until you say it out loud. She says, it comes up, I get an uncomfortable lump in my throat, and I start to cry. She was playing in the Canadian Open. The last tournament she's going to play is the U.S. Open in New York. I guess it starts at the end of this month. And then that's it. You know, she's won that tournament a lot. I have to say it's been painful in recent years to see Serena struggle as, you know, much, much, much younger players have beaten her. And then there was that time with Naomi Osaka where Serena threw a temper tantrum and got penalized a couple points and ended up blowing the match. But at least she was in the finals. When she played at Wimbledon, I mean, she got knocked out in the first round by some relative unknown. And that shouldn't be happening to Serena Williams. But she's going to evolve. She said, it's the hardest thing I can imagine. I don't want it to be over. But at the same time, I'm ready for what's next. And then she says, I'm far from perfect. I've also taken a lot of criticism. I'd like to think I went through some hard times as a professional tennis player so that the next generation could have it easier. I hope people will think of me as symbolizing something bigger than tennis. And then the coup de grace here is has this fabulous cover photo on Vogue in this blue dress, standing in front of the ocean, and the dress has an unusually long train, and at the end of that train, it's being held up by her daughter. So Serena Williams will be bowing out. More to come, I'm sure, about that. Let me sneak in a little war news here. There was an explosion in Crimea that Ukrainian forces now say they carried out against the Russian-controlled portion of their country. You'll recall that that was the first Russian invasion in which Crimea was split off back in 2014. And it's pretty significant because it shows that the Ukrainians are at a point where they can go on the offense. Apparently, one person was killed, 13 were injured, 9 Russian aircraft were destroyed, so say the Ukrainians. This could be a sort of an escalation if Ukraine can go on offense. The Biden administration just sent Ukraine, or is sending Ukraine, another $1 billion in military aid, the largest sum yet. I think the previous package was $800 million. You know, if Ukraine is not just playing defense in that disputed eastern province that Russia hopes to annex, that would be a game changer. All right, let's get back to the subject. Everybody here inside the Beltway is talking about, people all over the world are talking about, you're probably talking about, a lot of free publicity for Mar-a-Lago. Story number one. I think the most important thing I can tell you to begin a couple of segments on this about the FBI raid at Mar-a-Lago, and even using the word raid may be overly dramatic since it was a court-approved warrant. Karine Jean-Pierre, President Biden's press secretary, said that he had not been briefed by his own Justice Department before the FBI search of Donald Trump's home. The president and the White House, she says, learned about this FBI search from public reports. Aides to Biden said they were stunned by the development and learned of it from Twitter. There is no indication that the search, approved by a federal judge, is related to the Justice Department's investigation into January 6th, says the New York Times. I'll come back to that because that may not be so clear. But the point is, when you compare it to Donald Trump's obvious and perfectly open politicization of the Justice Department, publicly demanding that Jeff Sessions do certain things, that Bill Barr do certain things, that his political enemies be prosecuted. Remember when he said Barack Obama should be investigated and prosecuted for eavesdropping on me, and that his political allies, Roger Stone and others, Mike Flynn, should not face long jail sentences. Of course, he ended up pardoning them. But Biden, made this kind of a central plank that he would not interfere with what the Justice Department was doing on criminal investigations. And according to the idea that he didn't even get a heads up, which on the one hand you would think would not be so outrageous. On the other hand, it enables everybody involved to say, look, Joe Biden learned about this just like everybody else when the story broke. Now, yesterday I was pretty critical of Merrick Garland for this reason. I mean, I think he's been an incredibly cautious and low-key leader of the Justice Department, which I think adds to the credibility of whatever he does. But to do this raid, and they carted off, what, about a dozen boxes, and there had been previous reporting now we're learning that National Archives officials or other federal officials had gone to Mar-a-Lago earlier, had asked for the return of documents, that the Trump people were not turning it over. So this was an ongoing issue. Remember, this is a guy who we know from photographic evidence, thanks to Maggie Haberman's upcoming book, that who flushes documents down the toilet. We've actually seen pictures of Toiletgate. Anyway, apparently, Trump didn't return the documents or didn't return some of the documents. The FBI didn't, the archives officials felt that they were being stored in an unsecured area, so they put a lock on. That was the lock that the FBI agents broke. So New York Times and others are now coming around to the notion that this may have been overreach by Merrick Garland. This has produced an explosion of vitriol against the Federal Bureau of Investigation. And I have to point out, as I did yesterday, lots of hypocrisy here on both sides. When FBI was investigating Hillary Clinton, you can go to the clips. Everybody was saying outrageous that she would take classified information. This is a federal crime. The FBI, why did the FBI take so long? And of course, Democrats were saying, emails are not really a big deal and the media are making too much of this and so forth and so on. So here's the time saying for Garland, the pressure to justify the FBI's actions will be intense. And if the search for classified documents does not end up producing significant evidence of a crime, the event could be relegated by history to serve as another example of a move against Trump that backfired. That's a big admission for the Times and others who may be coming to that conclusion perhaps a day late. Again, there's a lot we don't know here, and I'll get to that in a second. Trump faces his own risks in rushing to criticize Garland and the FBI, calling it an assault that can only take place in a third world country and that sort of thing. I went into that in some detail on yesterday's podcast. A number of historians said that the search may have seemed extraordinary, but it was appropriate for a president who flagrantly flouted the law, refuses to concede defeat, and helped orchestrate an effort to overturn the 2020 election. And then Michael Beschloss, who is quite anti-Trump, is quoted in the story. Okay, Washington Post says, only one key Republican has remained quiet, and that is Mitch McConnell. In stark contrast to the House GOP, Kevin McCarthy and others just denouncing the FBI, McConnell doesn't mention Trump unprompted, has not disparaged the House January 6th committee. Trump, on the other hand, has called McConnell an old crow, says he got played like a fiddle when the Democrats passed the climate change bill. Even the comments by some of the candidates, the Trump-endorsed candidates who have won nominations in their states, Carrie Lake winning the nomination for Republican primary for governor, Our government is rotten to the core, she says. These tyrants will stop at nothing to silence the patriots who are working hard to save America. This is an incredibly horrendous abuse of power. We must fire the federal government. Well, whether it's an abuse of power depends on whether or not it was a lawful execution of a search warrant approved by a court. Newt Gingrich, you have a fake committee being covered by the fake news with a fake FBI, which, by the way, you'll notice they didn't allow anybody on the Trump side into Mar-a-Lago. So we have no idea whether or not they planted evidence. By the way, Newt Gingrich, we have no idea that they did plant evidence, and it's something that you are planting in the public mind based on, as far as I can see, not very much. Okay, so Christina Bob is a lawyer for Donald Trump. She used to work at OAN, where she was slavishly pro-Trump, and then she joined the Trump PAC, and now she seems to be the kind of legal spokesman for the former president. She criticized the search warrant used to conduct the several hours of going through boxes, and not just boxes, but the whole compound, as thin, and confirmed that authorities were looking for classified documents related to the Presidential Records Act. Okay, well, if you want to characterize this thin, why don't you, your boss, Donald Trump, release the search warrant? We can all take a look at it. Now, apparently there are parts of it that are sealed, and you would have to get permission, and I think that has to do with the detailed list of items being looked for. But the search warrant itself, I don't think it's fair. The Trump people can release it today. They want to criticize it. Oh, it's thin. Oh, it ain't much. They didn't even acknowledge it in the first day. Well, Trump didn't in his Truth Social post. Put it out. It's all going to come out eventually. Let us see. Of course, it changes the debate to see what the submission was by DOJ to the court. Okay, here's Andy McCarthy in National Review, a guy whose judgment I trust because although he's a conservative, he's also a former federal prosecutor, and he tries to be honest. He has taken the position that it would be a tragedy for the country if Trump was prosecuted. But here's what he has to say about what happened at Mar-a-Lago. The ostensible justification for the search of Trump's compound is his potentially unlawful retention of government records and mishandling of classified information. But the real reason, says McCarthy, is the Capitol riot. And that's what I was going off on yesterday, which is, you know, I mean, yes, it's serious to violate the Presidential Records Act, but Merrick Garland's not going to bring a case on that. So why did he take his eye off the ball? Well, McCarthy connects the dots in a way that I hadn't considered. He says this, Justice Department not ready to charge Trump for the riot. It lacks proof that he's criminally culpable for the violence. As for the nonviolent potential crimes like obstruction and conspiracy to fraud, these are based on disputed theories that Trump and his apologists could persuasively frame as a partisan weaponization of the Justice Department against the likely, I mean really likely, GOP nominee for 2024. So the DOJ does not want to suggest, at least publicly, says Andy McCarthy, that Trump is the subject of a criminal investigation related to the Capitol riot. Nor does it want to be perceived as having told a court it has probable cause tying Trump to Capitol riot crimes. But prosecutors did want to search his his premises for potential evidence of Capitol riot crimes. So what do? You give a pretext. It's all about classified records. He talked about, you know, when he was a prosecutor, you might know that a guy did a lot of drug deals, but you might not have proof that he committed a robbery. But so you go to the court and say, I want to get stuff on drug deals, and then you search and you look for, you know, you find a gun and a suitcase full of cash, then you've got what you really want. McCarthy goes on to say, you'll hear the word raid attached to the search. Don't be misled. The FBI conducted a court-authorized search. Federal prosecutor has to write a search warrant application sworn to by an FBI agent and convince a federal judge that one or more crimes probably occurred, and that there was probable evidence that those crimes would be found. I do not believe, he says, that DOJ contemplates prosecuting a former president for mishandling classified information. I especially doubt it when we're talking about a former president. It could be the Republican candidate opposing the incumbent Democratic president. After all, the Obama-Biden administration didn't charge Hillary Clinton with mishandling classified information. If the DOJ were to charge Trump with anything less than a slam dunk case, and especially one that smacked of selective prosecution, there would be an eruption of protest the Justice Department's legitimacy, which hinges on the public's acceptance of it as a nonpartisan law enforcer, would be at risk. And that sums it up. These are high stakes for everybody. DOJ credibility, Donald Trump credibility, the next election. What is Trump, whatever, let's just use the phrase, moral offenses he may have committed, whatever role he played in the Capitol riot. Is that a crime? Is that a crime you could prove in a court of law? Hey, let's pause right there. The buzz meter continues right after this.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network.
I'm Janice Dean, Fox News senior meteorologist. Be sure to subscribe to the Janice Dean Podcast at foxnewspodcast.com or wherever you listen to your podcasts. And don't forget to spread the sunshine.
Now we get to the rhetoric. Story number two. And these, a lot of these are sort of fringe right people. Nevertheless, Steven Crowder, conservative commentator. He's got 2 million Twitter followers, so he's not some tiny figure. Tomorrow is war, he wrote. Sleep well after the FBI search. Gateway Pundit, very pro-Trump website. This means war. That was amplified by an account tied to Steve Bannon. On Bannon's War Room podcast, Joe Kent, who's a Trump-endorsed House candidate in Washington, was asked for his assessment of the search. This just shows everyone what many of us have been saying for a long time. We're at war. What is the meaning of all this war rhetoric? How is this being amped up? Is this really a civil war? Doesn't it carry strong hints of violence? Here's the Maryland Republican nominee for governor, Dan Cox, endorsed by Trump. He called yesterday the FBI search criminal. Criminal for a federal agent to go to court. Okay, criminal. And said that if elected, he would use the full force of government, including the state police and the Maryland National Guard, to oppose President Biden's administration. State police. As governor, I will use the 9th and 10th Amendments, the Maryland Constitution, and so forth, to stand against all rogue actions of this out-of-control, tyrannical Biden administration with fierce tenacity. This is nothing short of communist Stasi police state tactics. What were these people saying when Hillary did it? All right. In a related matter, Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia ruled yesterday that federal law allows a House committee chairman broad authority to get Donald Trump's tax returns. The Treasury had refused to turn it over when Trump was president. When Biden took over, the department determined that a renewed request from House Ways and Means was valid. The appeals court ruling doesn't necessarily mean Congress will obtain the records, but and Trump could appeal to the Supreme Court, but he loses the legal ground here. All right, this little episode, I actually watched it live when it happened. So yesterday, Joe Biden had a bill signing for the CHIPS Act. Big bipartisan bill he's able to get through Congress, one of several. And so now you're trying to get more publicity and, you know, congressional leaders are there. He's actually praising Republicans, which I thought was a good thing to do. It was a bipartisan bill to make us more competitive with China on semiconductors. So it's on the South Lawn, and Monica Alba of MSNBC is the reporter standing probably 50 yards away. There's a lot of people there. So she says to the anchor back in the New York studio, "We're going to try to ask him to see if he potentially has any reaction to that search and seizure at Mar-a-Lago yesterday." So while Biden is actually signing the bill, and it's really loud, and there's applause, and I don't even think he can hear her, she shouts, "Mr. President, your reaction to the FBI search and seizure at Mar-a-Lago, do you have any reaction, sir?" And then she turns back and says, "Well, it appears he's not taking questions." But of course, this is the other news of the day. Again, this was all to show how aggressive Monica Alba was. Now, I don't have any problem whatsoever. You know, he finishes signing and he's getting up to walk away, shout questions, fine. Sometimes presidents turn around unexpectedly, and Joe Biden has done this, and answer questions. Obviously, he didn't want to. He wanted the CHIPS bill to be the news of the day, not anything he would say about Trump. And Pelosi and Schumer have also been very careful not to weigh in on the raid because they don't need to. If they weigh in, it makes it look more partisan. But to shout a question while the guy's signing a bill and everyone's applauding, and he can't even hear you, in my opinion, watching on a TV set, I just thought was a little bit of grandstanding. Okay, so this is typical of people who are now going through all this stuff. Sarah Huckabee Sanders, of course, former White House press secretary, but now running for governor of Arkansas, a job once held by her dad, who was on my show last week. She ripped the FBI raid. If you're not yet appalled by the total abuse of power from Democrats in Washington, you're not paying attention. Well, it took about, 12 seconds for somebody to put up a statement or post that Sarah Huckabee Sanders made public in 2016 when Hillary Clinton was under investigation by the FBI over the private email server, in which Sarah Sanders said, when you're attacking FBI agents because you're under criminal investigation, you're losing. And there's been a lot of that. Hey, you said this in this year. And, you know, I say both sides do it. Okay. Story number three, Politico has a piece about the fallout. What does this mean for politics? And, you know, it's a huge deal. You can just tell from the level of the rhetoric, from the Trump denunciation, of the anti-government rhetoric. And here he is. He's supposed to testify today in New York in the state attorney general's civil suit against the Trump Organization. So you got all these multiple probes going on, which is not unusual for this former president. And that's a civil case, but we'll see what happens. Obviously, no love lost between Letitia James, the New York AG, and the former president. The Politico says Trump and his allies are moving swiftly to draw political benefit from the Mar-a-Lago search. And they're keeping tabs of Republicans who aren't, in their view, sufficiently rushing to his defense. So somebody's taking names here. So it says that once Trump confirmed the news, there were hastily arranged calls among Trump allies to discuss how to calibrate a response. Soon enough, a clear narrative emerged. The search represented a deliberate political targeting, which underscored the Democrats' perceptions of Trump as a political threat. But they had the sense this could be a boon for the ex-president, and I don't think that's wrong, depending on how this turns out, as we talked about earlier. Okay, one person close to Trump and another individual in touch with the former president speculated, what's a great word, you can say anything with that he would now expedite his decision to announce a presidential bid. I think he was getting ready to do it anyway. Now there's this sort of like, well, he wasn't sure, but now he's definitely going to run. Look, he could announce tomorrow. While Trump's team was bullish about the political benefits of being targeted by the FBI, let me just stop and read that sentence again. Trump's team was bullish about the political benefits of being targeted by the FBI. I'm just sort of rubbing my eyes here because it's a little bit Orwellian. The situation comes with clear and obvious downsides, says Politico. Legal experts say it was unlikely the agency would have taken such action without clear evidence of wrongdoing. Well, we'll see about that. So you had the RNC dashing off this fundraising text. This is not a drill. Unprecedented move. Biden's FBI raids President Trump's home. Time to take back Congress. Okay, if they want to use as an issue to fire up their base, that's kosher in the midterm election season. But here's the interesting thing. Statements from GOP officials became a litmus test for Trump aides and allies. So they were very pleased that Kevin McCarthy came out with a statement saying, I've seen enough. The Department of Justice has reached an intolerable state of weaponized politicization. And it goes on, and he tells Merrick Garland to preserve his documents. Others like Lindsey Graham, you know, close golfing buddy of the former president, said President Trump is likely going to run again in 2024. No one is above the law. The law must be above politics. So Lindsey leaving himself a little bit of an out there. And basically what the story is suggesting is, if you're a Republican and you didn't rush to his defense, or you said something that was sort of, you know, too neutral, they got your name on a list and you won't be getting any help in the future. Now, maybe some of these people don't want Donald Trump's help in the future. But there's also this little implication like, you know, 2025, I could be in the White House and you could be in trouble. Hey, let's pause right there. The buzz meter continues right after this. All right, story four. If you're President Biden, remember, let me take you back to the time long ago, let's say Monday morning, before we knew that any such FBI search would be underway in Palm Beach, Florida. So, at that time, a lot of the coverage was about Joe Biden having the best couple of weeks of his presidency, going back to the killing of the leader of Al-Qaeda, getting the chips bill, as I just mentioned, getting the veterans bill. That was the John Stewart initiative, although obviously a veterans group strongly behind it. Bipartisan passage of that, I think it was 86 votes in the Senate to help these ailing veterans get medical care, those who've been exposed to burn pits, other toxins, and people have sought that for decades. And other legislation, plus the big climate change, health care, and corporate taxes bill, which the House should approve on Friday, and Biden will have a separate signing ceremony on that. And the whole question was, how much does this help Joe Biden? Will he go up in the polls? Will this reduce the number of Democrats, both rank and file, and those in his party who don't want him to run again? This is, you know, an incredible record of legislative accomplishment in just a year and a half. But how much will it help, and how much will it affect midterms or not? You still got the inflation problems, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Hold on, this just in, the monthly inflation report has come out, and there's been a slight drop in inflation. Prices for goods and services rose 8.5% in July. That's better than a month ago. And it's driven largely by a decline in the price of gasoline, which fell 7.7%. Joe Biden can take some credit for that, the way he's handled it. So it's not that 8.5% inflation is great, though initial reports are that the market likes it. But the fact that it's gone down at all, and this is, you know, Biden can say this is the issue that he's trying to deliver on. It's certainly better than if it had continued to go up. Much of the measures in the so-called Inflation Reduction Act, which the title of that bill is a joke, the big climate bill, a lot of the stuff doesn't kick in until 2025, but this is real-time stuff. Now, is the average person at the grocery store going to feel it? Probably not. But in terms of the media coverage, it's at least a qualified improvement for Joe Biden. That was completely blown off the screen by Donald Trump. Now, you can't, I'm using air quotes here, blame Trump because he didn't instigate the search. But it's just another example of how it just seems in the media and political atmosphere, we all live in Donald Trump's world. The Biden story just stopped. I saw some of the networks taking live the bill signing on chips, and I mentioned, you know, the shouted question from Monica Alba. But before that, it was virtually wall-to-wall, Trump-Mar-a-Lago. When the event was over, it went back to wall-to-wall, Trump-Mar-a-Lago. I mean, other things would get in there, maybe Serena Williams and so forth, a little bit of war, perhaps. But basically, Trump now again controls the news cycle, and again, something that was expected to be hurtful to him may actually end up helping him and Biden out of the news. So just as a kind of an experiment, I mean, really out of the news. I looked at the homepages of the New York Times and Washington Post today to see if they had anything on the bill signing or anything on, you know, Biden's accomplishments. You know, not that bill signings are obviously routine, but they're a way of drawing attention. And also there was a lot of talk about, well, we're announcing new projects under the infrastructure bill. I mean, there was a big rollout here. So on the New York Times homepage, I found nothing, like no Joe Biden story of any kind, except way, way, way down, there was a small type link to past columns. And one of them was from Maureen Dowd saying, Joe, don't run again, and appealing to him to, you know, take a victory lap and realize that, you know, voters don't want a president who'll be 82 at the next inauguration. That was it. No other Biden story. In the Washington Post, there was one Biden story down on the page, but it really was making a different point, and it isn't about what Joe Biden's doing now. It says that, you know, it looks likely that the Democrats will only have had 2 years of controlling all three branches of government, the 50-50, you know, razor-thin majority in the Senate, control of the House, which looks gone, and control of the White House. And so it talked about his legislative wins as a kind of a setup to the piece. And so And the $2 trillion coronavirus package, $1.2 trillion infrastructure bill, the gun safety conference. And then it says, and much of it is thanks to about 14,000 people in Georgia. And the whole rest of the piece is just about how a switch of 14,000 votes in that those two Georgia special elections where Donald Trump went down there and made it about him and his allegations of fraud, and where both Republican candidates surprisingly lost, enabled the Democrats to do all those things. If even one of those candidates, Democratic candidates, had not won, you would have had the Republicans controlling the Senate 51-49 instead of the 50-50 split with Kamala Harris. So Joe Biden out of the news, except for at least for today, except for those little squibs. All right. Story number five, meant to get to this the other day, but there's been a lot going on. Axios has announced a deal to sell itself to its lead investor, Cox Enterprises, in a deal valuing the company at $525 million. Now, the reason this is interesting is one of the founders of Axios is Jim Vandehei. He was also a co-founder of Politico with John Harris and Mike Allen. So Harris is still with Politico, but Vandehei left, Mike Allen left, and they founded Axios. And at first, I couldn't quite figure out what Axios was because it was all about digesting the news. And it tells you, you know, this is a 2-minute read. This is a 1-minute read. And it had some really, really good original reporting, particularly from Jonathan Swan, a package with, you know, specialty stuff, but also, and newsletters and all that, but also stuff that the casual reader, I thought, would know, but I don't think it was aimed at me. And then it went into local news and it's got, you know, Axios local titles in a lot of three places. So this is a pretty sweet deal because not only is the company valued at $525 million, but the current founders, the guys who still run it now, Vandehei, Mike Allen, and so forth, will stay there under the deal, and they will control the journalism part of it. So it's like you get a lot of money to sell, and then you don't have to leave the job. That's a pretty good thing to do. Now, so, you know, it's classic entrepreneurism. You know, you go out, you build a company from scratch, with your own idea, you raise money, and then you flip it to a bigger corporation that, and then you put out a press release saying, oh, this is great, and we look forward to all this cooperation and so forth. And Vandehei has done it twice, you know, to do it at Politico and then do it again in Axios is a pretty significant feat. Now, does this mean Axios will ultimately be less independent and so forth? You know, we'll see. But at a time when so many media operations are laying off people, when it seems like it's hard to build traffic, when a lot of sites are way down, I bet they're doing well this week, though. It's just, you know, all the constant turmoil of the Trump years boosted everybody's traffic, then the 2020 election, then coronavirus, and now, generally speaking, the news is not as exciting. But keeping us busy here this week, that's the Trumpian effect. He's never out of the news completely. And, you know, Trump has always believed, and I have always believed, that bad publicity helps him. Well, this is the ultimate test, right? As I read that sentence earlier. Being targeted by the FBI could be a good thing for Donald Trump. All right. Thank you for spending this time with me. Always appreciate your listening to the podcast, being able to do this. Sometimes I go long. Sometimes I go short. Sometimes I take it on the road. But I enjoy these conversations, and I hope you do too. You can subscribe, and we'll see you tomorrow with more BuzzMeter.
Listen to the all-new Brett Baer podcast featuring Common Ground, in-depth talks with lawmakers from opposite sides of the aisle, along with all your Brett Baer favorites like his all-star panel and much more. Available now at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.